Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Wazoo takes on Drake in the first round of the NCAA tournament tonight at 7 p.m. on Seattle Sports. You can hear the Mariners face off against the Reds live at 6:30, by the way, on 770 KTTH. As always, both games will air live in their entirety on the Seattle Sports app, talking about one of those games. Of course, it's the Cougs with Cougs play-by-play voice Matt Chazanow joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Matt, how's it going?
It's going great. What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. Good to talk to you.
We are excited to have you. It's a huge day, and I'm very, very excited to watch this game. I didn't know a ton about Drake heading into this one, so I'm going to start with the actual matchup itself. Really interesting difference in size between these two teams. Drake also coming off a really hot finish to the season. Tell me some of the factors you're looking at here for the Cougs.
Yeah, an interesting difference in size, very politically correct for the Drake Bulldogs.
Smallest team baseball. Against the biggest.
Yeah, yeah, they're a lot smaller at the guard spot, and they've really got one big, and he's a Big East recruit, and he's a load. And you think like Casey Ebekwe from Oregon State, big boy, 6'10", like 280, you know, and after that they get small. You know, they don't really have another true center. They bring a power forward off the bench, or what someone in the pack would say is a power forward off the bench, and he's their big man backup. So the size advantage is real. And Drake's most positive attribute, there are two of them. One, they've got one of America's best scorers and shooters, and it's the coach's kid, and it's Tucker DeVries. And I saw him yesterday. I was at their practice, and it's totally real. It is an NBA-level release, and the rotation's really tight, and it hits the rim soft, and he's 6'8", and it's awesome. And credit to him, he's worked really hard at that. And then they're 19th in the country in fewest turnovers a game, which means it's just really hard to take them off their stuff. And so they're going to run a lot of sets, and they're going to try to feed DeVries the ball. He has scored more than 34 times this year. He is that good. He reminds me of Robert Franks, Cougs had, who led the pack in scoring. And, you know, he may be better, you know, and I don't mean that as a discredit to Robo. Franks was a pro. It is a pro. He's playing pro, and DeVries will somewhere as well, be at the NBA or elsewhere, and he's a really good ball player.
Chaz, before I ask you a basketball question, I want to ask you a personal question.
Please go ahead. Let's get deep here.
Let's get deep. I'm crossing my legs. I have my, I'm rubbing my hands together. We're getting deep. during one of the Cougs' run, I noticed that you wore a sweater. Is there anything you will be wearing during the tournament to make sure you give the best of luck to our Cougs?
There is something. The universe is telling me something, and I need your help, Stacy and Bump. I am the least fashionable person in America. I am the last guy. And yet this is like the fifth time I have heard a discussion about the Cougar radio guy's wardrobe. And I don't know if I'm doing something right or I don't know if I'm doing something wrong. But something about what I am wearing has popped up more than once, which is hilarious because, I'm wearing a sweater. I am vest, to be honest.
Okay.
And it's crimson. And I'm glad you asked. And it is a personal question. So there you go. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a sweater vest?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah, listen,
interesting.
You know, warm torso.
You wore a sweater vest the other day.
I did. I literally wore a sweater vest yesterday.
There you go. Yeah.
I can co-sign it.
I highly recommend it. Yeah, I appreciate that, Stacey. I need your support on this endeavor. And thank you.
All right, so now to the basketball question. You obviously you've watched every game these guys have played this year. Is there a combination of players that you feel like if these two guys, maybe these three guys, or maybe just one guy, if they go out and perform, the Cougs have a good chance of making a run and winning a couple games?
Well, if they get four scores, they could beat anybody in the country. I mean, they average four double-figure scores a game if they actually get that, so Yaki being the fourth in double figures, if they really get the four double-figure scores a game, the way the Cougs do that, where you've got Jones inside and then Rice, who's done most of his scoring lately, inside, so you kind of want to consider those two rim scorers, and then you've got Wells and Yakimovsky, who primarily score from beyond the arc or shooting, It's way too much. Pulls teams apart, just kind of rips them out, takes their soul away. They defend one thing and then they can't stop another. And the combination of those guys and how they do that is very game flow dependent. So what's going well? You know, Isaac Jones played center for Idaho, and he can play that spot for the Cougs. He starts at the four, but he can also play the five. And the Cougs against the Buffs kind of went smaller, and that was when the offense picked up a little bit. It was too little too late, and they lost to the Buffaloes. So, you know, how they do it will probably be a little bit game dependent. Can you get Darnell Brody, the Drake big guy, in foul trouble? And if you can, then maybe you go even bigger, or do you go small? Because Drake's going to have to go really small and play fast. So, you know, I kind of defer to Kyle and game flow and fouls and how it's officiated and where that lands. But if you find this Washington State squad with like four guys between 10 and 15 points, and you get to 50 or 60 points with four guys, watch out, you know, especially if they don't turn it over. You know, if the Cougs do not turn the ball over and they get four double figure scores, there is no ceiling on this March run.
Have those turnovers been to you the primary pattern in that kind of finish to the season that was a little bit lopsided and uneven for what we've seen from this team?
Yeah, that's kind of that's the canary in the coal mine for the issues for this squad. If they can't run their stuff and if they turn it over, what happens is the pace quickens. The data has Washington State as one of the slowest paced teams in the country, and that's by design. They want to play a very defensive game and in the half court. It's also a lot easier to slow teams down in college basketball than it is to speed teams up. The only way to speed teams up is to either literally throw it to half court after a make, or you need to force a turnover, right? Now, after a miss, you can start a fast break, especially if you get a long rebound. All of those things are harder to do than just walking the ball up the court, right? And it's hard to pry the ball away from a team like Drake. So when the Cougs turn it over, they are forced to play faster. They can, but it's not their preference, right? So if the game is in the 80s or the 90s and it's up and down, we saw it against the Huskies in Seattle. It was a really tight game against the Ducks. It was in the 80s. They actually lost that game, but Oregon shot the lights out. But they'd favor a slower game. That's to Washington State's preference. If you look at the last ball game against Colorado, they turned it over 19 times. It's way too many. But they held the Buff to 58. If you think about the juxtaposition of 19 turnovers and 58 points allowed, the defense is incredible. Colorado averages north of 80 points a game. They're one of the best offensive teams in America. Boise State kind of ground them down a little bit last night because Boise plays like Washington State slower. It's easy, and that's easier to do in the tournament especially. 19 turnovers and 58 points allowed against the Buffs. I know they lost the game, but to only lose by six that way to Colorado and basically play your worst offensive game of the year is shockingly good. The defense is so real. That's what if they go deep, they'll figure the offense out, but the defense is there every game. I mean, they might be – you know, I don't know if they're the best defensive team in America, but they're definitely one of them. And they'll be able to do that against any team in the country. And if they score the ball, they'll be able to beat any team in the country.
Chaz, I like going to high school basketball games and sitting real close to the bench because you get to hear the coach. You hear the coaching. In football, you're separated by the field and the stands. You don't get much from it. You calling all these games, I assume you've heard the way Kyle Smith communicates with these players. What's his demeanor like in big games, and how do you think that's going to help these guys in this first round?
Yeah, it's super energetic and fiery. Like, you know, the most contemplative sort of stoic coach is like Brad Stevens with the Boston Celtics, where he really doesn't seem to emote a ton, and he's kind of cool, calm, and collected. And then the opposite of that is the stereotype of, like, Tom Izzo or Rick Pitino when they're, or, you know, Mick Cronin too, they're going at guys in a way that honestly nowadays kind of makes people uncomfortable, right? It's really not the style of the times. It's kind of an archaic thing. All of that being debatable, but that's kind of the feel, I think, right now in 2024. I would say Kyle is more energetic with the guys than at the guys. And there's a big difference, right? And I think when he's really fiery and passionate and he's trying to emphasize with energy key tactical points, right? And then sometimes in the huddles, he'll defer to Jim Shaw, who's often talking about defense. You know, he kind of calls it this Jim Shaw scramble defense because sort of his baby. And he's the architect of this thing, and Jim Shaw is a great basketball mind. So it's not like the vulgar, profane scream at the guys when Kyle is, you know, crimson faced and yelling. It's very energetic and passionate because he probably sees something that he wants them to change. And he's trying to emphasize that.
Obviously, the elephant in the room for him is about that contract extension. He was asked about it, not just on with us the other day, but at the tourney already. I mean, you know him, you've talked to him, you don't know what he's going to do, but what can you tell us about how he feels about the Palouse and about this program?
Well, I know he loves Pullman. I've used this anecdote a few times. You know, our coaches show is at Zeppo's. You guys know Zeppo's bowling alley, card room, bar, game room, right? So Bumpus is there from like sun up to sundown every time he's in Pullman. It's just nonstop. It's all that he needs. And you know, when I, in past years, various coaches for various sports, if the show's on the air at 6 p.m., the coach will arrive at like 5:50 or 6, and that's great. You know, we pop on and then they'll stay after or not if they've got to go somewhere, whatever. Well, I walk in one time, multiple times this has happened, and coach is in there, and I got there an hour early. It was like 5, so coach had been there, and he'd already been served food. And I walk up, and I was like, hey, buddy. I thought I was late. I was like, hey, what are you doing? And he goes, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, you're just here really early. He's like, yeah, I like the burgers. And I'm watching film. What are you doing? You know, and like, he's just so comfortable. He's in a really good spot in that regard. And his wife would come to the shows, and they'd bring their kids, and they'd hang out after, and they'd be there, you know, on a school night till as late as is reasonable for a, you know, mom and dad with 3 young kids. And I think he's going to have a hard decision to make if he gets a, you know, I would assume a very lucrative offer, and, you know, the money's so good for these jobs and it's so chaotic. But, you know, there are a lot of guys. There's a long list of coaches who stay at their jobs, and you can go through them, and they're big jobs, and sometimes they're off the beaten path and sometimes they're not. But, you know, Greg McDermott or Tom Izzo or Jim Boeheim or Leon Rice at Boise or Scott Drew at Baylor or Mark Few at Gonzaga or Randy Bennett at St. Mary's. There's a lot of guys who've stayed. There are also some guys who will never stay, who just serially bounce no matter what. Like Larry Brown famously is that guy in basketball. His bio is incredible, and he also wins everywhere. It's amazing. But he just won't stay. He won't stay in the NBA. He won't stay in college. That's what he wants to do, and he's always done that. And so, you know, Kyle's resume and his bio aren't that, right? But this is his third stop as a head coach. I don't know what he's going to do. You know, I think he's got a family decision to make, and I don't even know what his other offer is, if he, you know, how that looks. So, you know, I hope he stays because I think the world of him. I think he's a great guy. I think he's an amazing coach. He's wonderful to be around. Like, I can't say enough good about him. He's genuine and disarmingly kind and just kind of a regular. I mean, college basketball coaches are often difficult personalities. A lot of them would admit that, you know, and wouldn't take much truth serum to for them to say so. And Kyle's really the inverse of that. It's all very easy and pleasant. And, you know, he's literally like got his headphones on when I go to the back locker room. Like list because he tries to calm down before games and he's the game plan is installed and he's like listening to a history podcast. So I'll walk in the back
respect
before tip and like we'll start talking about like geopolitics before the game. It's like in what world am I in? Like some coaches they don't even like let you in. You got to only interview and then you got to leave because they're tight and uncomfortable. And so he's great, you know. And in some ways it might be a perfect fit in Pullman and. You know, I hope for the Cougs and for him, it is.
All right. His voice will be leading us off at 7:05 p.m. for tip off between number 7, Washington State, and number 10, Drake. He is Cougs play-by-play man, Matt Chaz. Now, thanks so much, Matt.
Thanks, Chaz.
All right, guys. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
All right. Let's get to 4 down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, you do not like the expanded crackback rule proposal, but you also understand why it might be implemented. Tell us more.
Yeah, I don't like it because I was a smaller guy out there and I needed this rule. So pretty much what it's saying is if a player starts in a backfield, he goes in motion. Once he starts to block and is not in the position where the football is, they cannot make contact with the defender below the knees. Now, the reason why I liked it was because you put me in a slot, I go in motion, you're going to ask me to take care of the edge. So when Achenna Nwosu, Aboye Mafe, ADT, they outweigh me, they're bigger, they're stronger. I have to get down and cut them at the knees to make sure I get that block. So what they're saying is now that I got to go head up with this guy, he's just going to run me over. I understand it because it's not safe for the defensive player. They are expecting it to some extent, but not necessarily expecting it. And a lot of the rules that have been changed in the NFL always benefits the offensive player. So, again, selfishly, I don't like the rule because I think of the guy who's 5'11", 190, and has to go in motion and block that edge. That's the only way he's going to win that block. So now what you're saying is you're just going to get in that guy's way and try to slow him down because that edge guy is going to win that battle 7 out of 10 times, depending on the size. But I get it, man. You have to protect these defensive players. You've done so much for the ball carrier. You've done so much for the quarterback. It's about time the defensive players get some love. So I understand it, but I do not like it because I know the type of stress is going to put on those smaller receivers.
Second down. The NFL Competition Committee has some important decisions here to make in a little bit, but what would be one of the worst decisions they could possibly make?
I can't believe there are some coaches advocating for this.
Okay.
They want to get rid of the kickoff completely.
And do
just
what?
Just line up at the 25 and say, let's go get it. So then I went and I looked up some of the kick returns for touchdowns in the playoffs. You got Percy Harvin. We all remember that one. You got Devin Hester. Mm-hmm. Miles Austin has one. Dante Hall has one. Desmond Howard, the great. And then Ron Dixon has two of them things. And again, I will beat this drum until I can't anymore. You don't want to get rid of this. It's all about field position in football, and this provides field position. So what you're saying is it could be late in the game. It could be the fourth quarter. You got a minute and some change left on the clock. You got no timeouts. You want your returner to take it out the end zone and try to switch the field position and shorten the field. I just don't like it. I think if you're a defensive coach, you probably love it. You can guarantee you're going to defend a 75-yard field. But if you're on offense and you need a quick score, that just eliminates that. And again, it's one of the more exciting plays in football, man. I forgot what the stat was, but a few years ago I looked it up. And if you score on the special teams other than a field goal, the chances of you winning the game just go up astronomically. So I just want to keep it in the game. I can't believe there are some coaches advocating for this. I guarantee you they're defensive coaches. The offensive guys do not want this rule to go down.
Third down. Why can we put the thought of Jaden Daniels going number one to rest?
All right, it's a wrap, guys. It's a wrap. He's not going number one. And it's not because of film study. It's not because of interviews. It's simply because Keenan Allen was at Caleb Williams' pro day yesterday in a Chicago Bears. So I'm just going to go out there and say the Bears would not send Keenan Allen to the pro day in his gear if they didn't think that was going to be his quarterback.
Literally send him there to be like, get ready to catch passes from this
guy. Go check him out. Wear your gear. Let everybody see you. So everyone can chill. Commanders chill. You're not going to get him, all right? So, it's real simple. That's it. And I watched some of Caleb Williams' pro day. And honestly, it was kind of a joke. It wasn't that serious. He didn't take it that serious. He knows he's in a position of leverage and power. But seeing Keenan Allen there had to be refreshing for Caleb Williams and every other Bears fan out there. They're not going to let this young man slip away. Number one, Jaden Daniels is going to the Commanders. It's a wrap.
Fourth down. What do you feel will ensure the Seahawks offense hits the ground running?
It's all about that offensive line. Yesterday we talked about Olu getting a chance at the center spot. He's still got Nick Harris there as well. It's been a while since we've seen the same five men start every single game for the Seattle Seahawks. Now, injuries happen, unfortunately, and that's going to be a part of this deal. But it's all about that offensive line because I have complete confidence in the backfield with running backs. I got complete confidence in Geno and the receivers. I still think they need to draft a tight end, but I like Noah Fant and Farrell Brown is a good blocker. I talked to our guy, Nasa Chobe, this morning. And Farrell said, look, I want to be more known as more than just a blocker. He can catch the football. He can get busy a little bit with a rock in his hand. But it's all about that offensive line, man. I think you got to go into camp solidified. The depth chart has to be on point. These are going to be our starting five. Go ahead and give Olu the nod or Nick Harris. I don't care. Just solidify that offensive line. Abe Luke, it sounds like he's going to be healthy. But the reason why this offense is going to go is because this offensive line is going to come in completely healthy. And I believe in them 100%. So, easy little four down a day. You know, it's a Thursday. Stacey, you're gone tomorrow, so I'll treat it as a Friday. Nice and nice and low key, but it's all about that offensive line in their hill.
You are listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. As a reminder for you guys, opening day right around the corner, and we want to send one of you and three friends. I hope you have three friends. If you don't, that's okay.
I'll be your friend.
To the game. All you need to do is open the Seattle Sports app and click on the Win tab to find out how. If you don't already have the app, you should. Simply text APP, A-P-P, to 866-979-3776, and we'll send you a link to download it right now. Don't miss out on your chance to join the fun at opening day. This contest runs through Sunday, March 24th. All right. We still have some Mariner stuff to get to coming up at noon. A really interesting conversation about the potential return of one controversial Seahawk coming up a bit later this hour. Before we get to any of it, though, opening day is next week, and we hope you're hungry because T-Mobile Parks released new food items for the 2024 season. Plus, we finally got a statement from Troy Dannon. Not everyone's happy about it. And finally, the AD of one team in the tourney is wild for doing this. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey. Reading you the top stories you're going to see and hear about on your own timeline. We'll start with the recently departed AD Troy Dannon. He's on his way to Nebraska and released a statement to Huskies fans following his abrupt departure after less than 6 months as AD with Washington. It says a very... no offense to Troy, kind of generic. Husky Nation, as you now likely know, I've made the difficult decision to leave the University of Washington. Husky athletics will always be among the nation's elite. Its coaches, student athletes, staff, and supporters remain the envy of many. I regret that my tenure on Montlake was so brief, as this truly is an incredible place. I wish nothing but the best for the Huskies going forward and will always be grateful for the support you showed me personally and to our department. There's an exclamation point. Go Dogs.
If I'm Huskies athletics, I'm like, you don't know me. You don't know me. You was only here 6 months. What do you mean to leave? You ain't been around. You don't know everybody's name. It's generic. This is a ChatGPT type stuff right here.
Like, this really is. He was like, issue an apology.
Make me an apology to Husky Nation and let them know that it was brief, but I still love them. Yeah, this is all formality. This is what you're supposed to do. Nothing special here.
Your ChatGPT apology is such a perfect summary of what this is. Now, it's professional on his part to actually issue a statement and say something. And, you know, like, I'm not going to just belabor the guy for going to a school in an area where he's from. He's from the Midwest. I will say two things stand out to me. Number one, Dannon's turned off the replies to this tweet.
Good for him.
Yeah, I would do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Number two, I'm surprised with the amount of, I guess, local coverage that's kind of joking about it. Like, I saw Mike Varell, Bob Condotta kind of joke about a potential lack of sincerity with this. And those are both incredibly professional reporters where I kind of wonder, like, is this one of those cases where even people who know insights about this team were like, yeah, this guy...
he wasn't here long enough to build a real connection to the area.
I think that's part of what it
is. 6 months ain't enough, man. Maybe you're here a couple years, you get to know. He's... now, granted, I use GPS everywhere I go because I like to know what time I'm going to get there. But he probably can't even get around Seattle. I mean, he ain't been here long enough to really understand what this place is. You can get around better than you think, I believe.
If I am downtown Seattle, no matter where I am, and I'm from here, I have to pull up a map to find I-5.
Really?
It's just very confusing.
Yeah, you can head in the right direction, though.
I mean, I guess I could head away from the water.
Yeah, there you go. That's a star. That's right there.
Head north, you know, just keep driving north.
No, go east, Stacey.
What? Next up, the Mariners have announced new ballpark food for 2024. And you guys, I wish that there was some kind of item where I could have teased out, like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. I can't believe it's so expensive. But my mouth is watering. This all sounds absolutely amazing. So you've got Tamari Bar, which is going to have, like, little bowls with, like, katsu curry rice and stuff like that. Walk-off Market is going to have a meatball sub. Let's get to the good stuff. Salt and Straw is going to be there, and they are one of my favorite ice cream places. I'm not wild about the two specials that they're going to have, Berry Slab Pie and Strawberry Coconut. But I think that overall their ice cream is absolutely delicious. Highly recommend it. You're also going to have a crab pizza for Moto Pizza and a barbecue place. Mini chimichangas at Edgar's Cantina. My mouth is watering. I'm so excited for all of these.
I'll tell you one thing. Go, I don't know, wherever you find this link. The presentation is awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're selling the heck out of this. I'm excited about the Moto Pizza. My family, we love us some good pizza. It looks great. It looks expensive, too. I wonder how much a thing's going to cost.
For the Moto Pizza? Have you had Moto Pizza?
Yeah.
It's good. Uh-huh. I've only had the pepperoni, though. I haven't had the other flavors that they're going to have there. They're also going to have the King Pizza. So Ethan Stowell's Ballard Pizza now has this. It's a pizza with mini rigatoni pasta, chili flakes, tomato, mozzarella, parmesan. It's pizza with pasta on it. And I'm kind of here for that.
Yeah, I'm here for that.
It's called carbo loading, you guys. You got to get ready for the game. It's a long night. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is it? I mean, games are short now,
I don't
man.
Know.
Games are short.
Last one is going to be, there's a ton of other stuff, but Chick Chick Boom is going to have a crispy chicken cutlet served with dill pickles and boom boom sauce on a fresh brioche bun. I don't know. There's going to be some amazing food at T-Mobile this year. You can find the menu online at T-Mobile. Next up here, I mentioned that one AD is wild for this one. Here's the story. Long Beach State AD Bobby Smitherin, rhymes with Slytherin, is trying to take credit for his school's run to the tournament by saying that firing Dan Monson, obviously previously head coach, inspired them to play better.
Come on, man.
I respect it.
Let the man have his moment.
I respect this.
You know, actually, guys, I just want to take credit because him not being competent enough in my eyes has inspired you guys to play good basketball. And you know what? There might be some truth to that, right? These guys know their coach is going out. They're going to win one for coach, man. Let's go out with a bang. But you don't come out and try to take credit for that, man. You let him have his moment. You let those guys go out and compete.
I mean, you can find the argument if you've convinced yourself you're right, that your team rallied around an obstacle.
Probably did.
You know, and they did.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you're still having Monson coach. It's not like you removed him. He's still there. They're playing right now. And they're up on Arizona. Obviously, it's in the first. All right, next here. Cavs head coach J.B. Bickerstaff shared a wild recent experience he had with sports gamblers getting a hold of his personal contact info.
I personally have had my own instances with, you know, some of the sports gamblers. Where, you know, they got my telephone number and were sending me crazy messages about, you know, where I live and my kids and all that stuff. So it is a dangerous game and a fine line that we're walking for sure. It brings added pressure. It brings a distraction to the game that can be difficult for players, coaches, referees, you know, everybody that's involved in it. And I think that, you know, we really have to be careful with how close we let it get to the game and the security of the people who are involved in it, because, again, it does carry a weight. You know, a lot of times the people who are gambling, like, this money, you know, pays their light bill or pays their rent, and then the emotions that come from that. So I do think we're walking a very fine line, and we have to be extremely careful in protecting everybody who's involved.
What do you think about that?
I think he's right. Whenever gambling is involved, not to say everyone who's involved in gambling is like a shady character, but there are shady characters involved in this, and people do pay their bills off of this gambling stuff. I've had a couple homies who were really relying on this parlay to get some things done. And what that does is just brings out types of emotion that could be dangerous to players and coaches, anyone involved. So, I mean, if you are in an arena, hopefully you've gone through the security and you don't have anything on you. Mm-hmm. But as far as getting close to the bench and threatening, and then outside the arena, finding these guys' information, you can find where anyone lives, honestly. It's that easy. So with gambling kind of being normalized, you have to take other precautions in protecting the guys that they are gambling on, because I've heard and seen a lot of bad things happen because somebody didn't hit, didn't cover, or whatever else involved. I don't gamble much. I don't think I've ever gambled on a basketball game before. Mm-hmm. I've done like the bracket or whatnot. So I don't know what that life is like, but I've seen the stress that it puts people under.
The concept of people from outside of the sports world, because they're involved with gambling, getting involved with sports in malicious ways is by no means new. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are historic examples of this. But it is something that I was thinking of yesterday when I was reading this story. And, you know, we were sending emails for the show about the Ohtani story, being like, okay, how do we want to approach this? You know, what do you think about this? And I was reading this story separately thinking, this is almost where my mind goes, is less about what's going on with Ohtani, though I am very fascinated by that, and more about, as gambling becomes more prevalent and the stakes become higher, how long until you have people threatening players and coaches and people with malicious intent, you know, trying to get involved? I know, but that to me is the terrifying part of gambling. Mm-hmm. It is a story if Shohei Ohtani was working with an illegal bookmaker to place bets on international soccer games. To me, it is more ominous when coaches and players are getting threats from people outside of sports to throw a game or do a certain thing, or even in retaliation. I'm angry with you because you didn't get this parlay for me, and now I'm threatening you and your family.
And here's the thing, too, is that some guys are going to comply with these bettors. Guaranteed, it's going to happen. Nothing is foolproof, but these are the doors that you opened up when you legalize gambling, and this is something they're going to have to deal with. So now it's up to the leagues and everyone involved to really make sure these guys are taken care of, because it's just a game, but some guys are relying on this game to feed their families.
Yep. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. The Jamal Adams trade ended with a feeling of disappointment, as the former All-Pro didn't hit his stride in Seattle, dealt with nagging injuries, and was eventually released. But what if that story isn't over yet? That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Bump, I heard something interesting.
What's that?
Well, I'll tell you what it was. It was Brock Heward. Now, Brock says lots of really interesting things, but this one made me raise two eyebrows. Jamal Adams, as we know, among the big-name players, including Quandre Diggs, Will Dissly, that was released by Seattle. It has not worked out well. The trade just wasn't able to meet the expectations that the Seahawks had when they made it. I thought, look, end of the road. End of the road. Brock doesn't think the book is closed.
I don't think Quandre is going to be back here. There's still some possibilities, maybe a linebacker.
Jamal
Adams? Jamal Adams back as a linebacker only? Is that outside the realm of possibility with a new staff and a new regime? And they certainly know that body over the last 4 years and the injury history associated with it. And, well, if there's really nobody else out in this market that's willing to take a swing, we know Mike McDonald in his past has taken swings at veteran guys and gotten a lot of production out of them. And by the way, a couple of those veteran guys, I believe, are also still out on that market, and Clowney and Ben Noy. And, you know, as you get closer to and through OTAs and everything else, not as a safety. Safety's accounted for, taken, you know, there's a safety I really like, two of them out of Utah that I could see in the mid to late rounds as well. So safety, I think, is off the board.
Mm-hmm.
Linebacker still in question. And in this draft, if you don't find a linebacker and Jamal Adams is still out there and unsigned and is willing to play that, I don't think that's 100% off the table.
Former Seahawks safety re-signs with Seattle as a linebacker. How are you seeing that theory?
That's interesting. I get why Brock would say that, because Jamal is at his best when he is in the box. Now, Pro Football Reference has him at 6'1", 213 pounds. Your linebackers are typically around 225, 230, something like that. 6'1", I don't know if he's 6'1". I give him 6 foot, but you know how we do. I'm 6 foot too, Stacey.
You always got to add just, you know, one or two to the height. Yeah.
My son asked me the other day, he goes, Dad, when people ask how tall you are, what do you say? I say 6 foot. And they're like, well, why do you say that? Because I go, well, with my shoes on, I'm 6 foot.
Yeah.
And I was, okay, that makes sense. Anyway, back to Jamal. I can see why Brock would say that because he plays like a linebacker. But I also think that there is a transition that's going on with this team right now. And Jamal is part of that transition. Hmm. I wouldn't be opposed to Jamal coming back at with a smaller contract and maybe on a one-year prove-it type of deal, which we're seeing these guys dish out to these safeties and linebackers that they're acquiring. But I also think that you've played one position for so long. He's been in the league 7 years, 80 games he's played in the NFL, and he's probably been a safety or a DB or a receiver, a skill guy. Oh, linebackers are skill guys, but the smaller skill guys, his whole life. To ask him now to play primarily in the box, to take on these offensive linemen consistently, to not try to avoid but contact shed blocks, it's just a different style of play that comes with being a linebacker that he might be able to do. But when you've done something for so long, and it's not like he's a young fella anymore. He's 28 years old. I mean, in NFL years, he's getting up there. It's hard for me to see him make that transition. Would it be an interesting experiment? Yes, it would be an interesting experiment because we know that when he's healthy and he's violent, he gets to the football and he makes plays. But I think it's more of a culture thing. Like, let's kind of get away from some of the things that the Seahawks were when guys like Jamal were there and start off fresh. And I think bringing him back would be interesting. I just don't see him playing linebacker. I think there's a team out there that is going to accept him for who he is and say, go ahead and play safety and do what you do. We'll use you like a backer, but we're not going to ask you to line up and take care of the B gap every single play, because that's not what he's done in his career.
Do you think people think it's easier than it really is to just kind of like, well, he plays in the box, so why not?
Yeah, but he plays in a box, but it's usually on the edge. He's usually walking down to the line of scrimmage. The backside of runs, he's good there. And I think he showed over the past couple of years that tackling was an issue for the whole Seahawks organization. And it was an issue for him partly because of his injury. It was hard for him to start and stop with that quad injury. It's just, it's not that easy. It's like when Lamar was entering the league and they're like, oh, we're going to move him to receiver if it doesn't work out. He probably could do it. But if your mind, body, and soul ain't there, your performance ain't going to be there either. So I'm not mad at the idea. I think Brock knows football. And I think Brock can see him in the box. Me personally, I just don't think he'd want to do that.
Yeah, I think I'm glad that you mentioned culture, because that's the bit that I was stuck on, is you're talking about transitioning to a completely new one, mm-hmm. a new coaching staff, one that we hope has a lot of accountability. This isn't me saying Jamal Adams can't be accountable or wasn't accountable. This is me saying there were, it just existed, questions about Jamal Adams as a fit. Hey, we know that he can be super fired up, but like, I remember covering like a million things during the season about like, why didn't Jamal show up at this game? And, you know, could Jamal push himself? And, you know, what's going on with him tweeting this stuff? Like, these were all stories I remember covering.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I could find a million and five excuses. Like, well, I wouldn't be there if I was doing rehab, or like, you know, whatever other excuses you're making. I don't know that the team was doing the same, though. Like, when they moved on from Jamal, to me, it was in part a culture decision. You're right.
Yeah, it's same reason why I think they moved along from Bobby. It wasn't that Bobby wasn't a great player. I mean, he had a Pro Bowl season. Say what you want about his tackles. Here they come. I know the texts are coming. But it was more of, let's make sure that Mike McDonald and the rest of the staff has every opportunity to make this team theirs. And some of these older guys on these bigger contracts would have more of an influence in the locker room than I think that they would like. As football players, I'm pretty sure Mike McDonald could look at a healthy Jamal and say, I could use him on this defense. Let's set him up. I'm sure he looks at Bobby Wagner the same way and say, I can use him. Let's set him up. But it's deeper than just the personnel, the actual player. It's about making this thing yours. And unfortunately for Jamal, his contract, his play, and maybe his personality kind of made it easier for these guys to say, let's move on and go a different direction.
Yeah, and just, this is not at all what you're implying, but the case remains true. Bobby and Jamal, very different personalities. Mm-hmm. Bobby's one of the most professional people I've ever interviewed. But Bump's point is most regimes like their own guys. And
yeah, bring your guys.
You know what I mean? It's just a very natural thing. And this would kind of go against this like basic logic we assume most coaching staffs want. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe it depends. Maybe this is like if he doesn't sign anywhere else, they don't get a linebacker in the draft. They add him just to have someone. But I don't know. This one feels weird to me. All right. We are switching gears, getting ready for opening day right around the corner a week from today. Ryan Roland-Smith joining us for a season preview. You guys can join this conversation. How many wins are you projecting for the Mariners this year? 866-979-3776. Text your answers now.